everyone, welcome back to The Growth Signal, where we are rethinking and reimagining the future of customer relationships, how we build them, how we keep them, and how we continue to lead as customer expectations rapidly evolve. My name is Alyssa Nolte.
And I'm Nikita Vakrushev.
And we are going to have an incredible conversation today. So Nikita, what is your hot take?
I literally just thought of this on the spot, but I think my hot take is most people don't like sales because they haven't had a good sales experience. And from my personal experience in the last few weeks and months, I can see why, because I've had horrible sales experiences from like normal everyday companies. And yeah, I think just the art of sales is dying. I know that was a long one, but I think at the end of the day, it's just the art and the science behind selling properly is just non-existent anymore.
Yeah, I think I agree 100% with that. I always tell people I'm a reluctant seller. Like you, when you're an entrepreneur and you're building a company, you have to sell, right? But then when I started to get more established and I started to work with quote unquote career salespeople, I was like, oh, no wonder everybody hates sales, because you get a bad rap and you behave this way and you deserve everything that people think about you and your profession.
That's the thing. Like, I mean, the most recent example for me is I was looking to get a new car and I called up a dealership and I'm like, hey, I'm looking to talk to a salesperson. And I'm talking to a salesperson. I'm like, hey, do you have this car on the lot? And it was like, let me go check. And like comes back. It's like, all right, we have the car on the lot. I'm like, okay, cool. What are the financing terms? And like, oh, let me go check. And like, I asked like 3 to 4 to 5 different questions. And every single time it was like, let me go check. It wasn't like a, hey, like stay on the phone. Like, let me look this up right now for you. And like, you can hear the keyboards clacking and all that. It was like 3 to 5 minute pauses in between the checking. And I got like what I could have just Googled. I had to like go through that entire process. I'm like, what are you selling? And as I bought the car and went through the sales process, her manager was taking care of like 99% of the work. And anytime I asked her, she had to go check. Now, I don't know if this is like maybe a new person coming in or, but I don't know. That was like a extremely distasteful like experience.
I don't know about you, but I see a post every other day on LinkedIn or wherever that basically AI is coming for your job and AI is here to take your job. And, you know, here's how you future-proof your career. But it sounds to me like in that case, AI probably could have handled all of your questions much more quickly than this one person could have.
Yeah, I would have more liked, like I would have probably preferred talking to an AI agent that knows anything about dealer inventory than this specific person. Like even in like the normal day-to-day where like a person would interact with a salesperson, outside of that, even on B2B, like I've had accidental sales calls happen. And granted, that is maybe part of the funnel that the other person was running. It was like an introductionary referral call. Like, okay, cool. Let's see how this is. And like, we'll figure out what the call is. It turned to a sales call pitching me. And they didn't even go through any of my like problems, concerns, pain points, or anything. Like they maybe have asked like a few surface level questions. And then they immediately went into their pitch without even asking for permission on like whether they can pitch me. I don't know. That's like my biggest gripe is like, if you're going to pitch me, at least ask me like, hey, you want to hear about what we do? And it's like, yeah, sure. Let's hear what you got. And then they can get into the pitch. So just like a lot of these different interactions over the last few months have just made me disappointed in how salespeople treat customers and leads. And even as something as simple as like calling me back in the same day of like, hey, I need my lawn mowed. Can I get a quote? I submit like a quote, no text confirmation, no email confirmation. And then eventually, like, I have to follow up with them the following day because they didn't give me a call back. And it's like, I need someone to mow my lawn. I'll get an HOA violation, please.
It's sad, though, that, like, I wrote down in my notes as you're talking, like, we can't even expect salespeople to do the bare minimum. Like, please take yes for an answer. I am trying to give you money. I'm trying to make this happen for you. Please, for the love of God, just call me back. Respond to my email. And a lot of these things, I feel like in today's day and age, there is no excuse. Like if you fill out a form with interest, I should automatically get an email or a text that says like, hey, I got your message. We are aware that we have it. We'll get back to you. We're so busy because we're in such demand that it might be X amount of time, whatever, however you want to phrase it. But to have nothing, like that's so lazy. Why are we acting this way?
It's I try not to look at it as a transactional thing, or at least I try to put myself in a person's shoe of like, okay, cool. Like, I'm trying to give you money at the like, but at the same time, like, I've had clients be like, I'm trying to give you money. Why aren't you closing? Like, it was a culture fit. That was the big thing that was holding us up. But even then, like, it's, you could have an automation set up to have that same messaging that you mentioned of like, hey, like, we'll get back to you in 24 to 48 hours. If you haven't, call us here. Like, just something as simple as that, just to let me know like what to expect or what kind of communication style to expect. Because at the end of the day, like, I see myself as someone that's very easy to transact with. Cause like, for me, before I even make the purchase, I've done all my research and I'm just there to already just spend my money. So like, if you can make it easy for me to spend my money, I will give you my money. Even it's like something as simple as sending an invoice. It's like, hey, let's do this. Send me the invoice. They're like, okay, we'll have to wait. It's like, send me the money that I need to pay you. Cause I will pay it. So,
yeah.
I don't know. That's probably my hot take. I don't know if it's as hot as some of the other ones, but I don't know.
I think it's right in line though, too, because it's something that I'm experiencing, and it's not just like, you know, with my contractor who I'm trying to get to build an addition or someone to come mow my lawn, but I've been on the other, a part of transactions where we're talking to these big B2B organizations where they're trying to get my client to buy some, you know, semi multi-million dollar deal. And yet the salespeople are not pushing it along with any sense of like urgency.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I don't want you to beep down my door and bother me, but if I'm ready to say yes, why are you not facilitating that for me? Why are you not moving that forward? If I have an urgent problem, what is keeping you from doing what it takes to help me solve that problem and get your goals met in the process?
Yeah. 100%. I've dealt with this so many times where it's like either on our client's behalf or on my behalf, where like I'm trying to buy a service or a mastermind or a quote, like a course or a coach or whatever it is. It's like, why are we moving on this as fast as possible? And then again, sometimes it makes me feel like, am I the one where like I'm always expecting more from other people? Because like, I operate in a way where like, if a client's like, hey, I'm in, the invoice is getting sent like 30 seconds later because I need to collect that cash and I need to start them on the onboarding. I like to move very, very quickly because time, like, I've had opportunities lost because we waited a week or we waited a few days and it's like, well, can't sell anymore during this time period because the time is over. So
right.
I've made that mistake before. So that's why I'm always quickly or always acting quickly. But on the other side, I don't know why people are getting lazy with making more money, essentially.
Right. Well, and like I wrote down as you're talking, time kills all deals, right? And it's totally true. There is no reason once someone has said yes to slow walk it. Well, okay, let me rephrase. Maybe there is no reason once someone said yes, but you mentioned a little bit earlier that, you know, you've said no to a deal before because it wasn't a culture fit. Can you tell us more about that from a non-transactional relationship point? Why is there ever a reason to slow walk or kill a deal if they've said yes?
So for me, the biggest thing is opportunity cost. Opportunity cost, relationship / your reputation, and then the efficacy of your services. So a lot of like, even if a client is willing to give me money and I don't, and the gut check says no, I would have to say no to them, because we've had experiences where like I've said yes, we're like, okay, like I'm almost convincing myself to like, I'm selling myself on this deal of a client trying to give me money. And whenever I'm trying to get into the headspace of like, oh yeah, I think we should definitely do this, here's the upsides, instead of like, yeah, we're doing this, then I know it's not going to be a good fit. And in the experiences where it wasn't a good fit in the past, we've had clients churn within a month or a few weeks. And that's because the alignment wasn't there. They weren't open to any new ideas. They were apprehensive to anything that we were trying to push. And it just didn't work out. So it's like, okay, I'd rather, number one, avoid a churn or a potential chargeback from a client. Number two, I'm already putting in all the effort. My team is putting in a lot of effort. As soon as we onboard a client, we're going to be working on doing a ton of research. We're doing a ton of setup, and we're doing a ton of work to get up to speed with their business. That's a lot of friction on our end. So I don't want someone to sign on only for them to churn a month or two later when we've done all of the heavy lifting already. And now it's like, okay, we're in a good groove. We know what your brand's like. We know what we're going to be sending out. We know cadence that you're working with. And it just ruins the team morale, which going back to like service efficacy, like if our team morale is down, then it's going to affect the entire rest of the clients, even if it's one client that's like the bad apple in this scenario. We had designers where we had a bad client that I didn't know about because I was out of communication, and the designer themselves were handling the client. And they told me after I fired the client that they were having confidence issues because of that client being so critical. So it's like those types of things stack up, and being a service-based business, our main product is people, and having good people on board is like the only thing that I need to worry about. So it's like, if you're messing with my people, then okay, then we're not going to have a relationship. And I'd rather not have your money and just have a smooth sailing ship than have your money and potentially lose one of our best people.
Yeah. We used to like every small business, we used to have core values that we would list out and like really live by. And for my old company, my first startup, one of our core values was clients. And we were very specific and upfront with our clients that didn't necessarily mean that we would do everything that they ever wanted. And it literally said in our core value, we believe in doing what's best for our clients. And sometimes that means telling you no. And sometimes that means telling you you're wrong. And sometimes that means doing things not how you necessarily want them, but how they need to be done. And you wouldn't believe the number of people that were like blown away by the idea that as a service-based consulting company, we weren't going to do everything that they wanted, that we were going to do what was best for them and in their best interest and in the best interest of our team.
I think that's where a lot of respect is gained, not only from like the relationship side of client to customer or client to service provider, but also respect from the owner or like the main point of contact that you're working with, because it's like, it's natural to have pushback. I think as people, I try to always try to incite arguments, but I'm always happy to entertain arguments and just see what like the other person's perspective is and fully flesh out their idea. And I think a lot of like going into it bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, it's like, oh, we're not gonna have arguments, like we're just gonna work things out. But at the end of the day, you kind of have to do what is in the client's best interest. And sometimes what's in their best interest is telling them, hey, like, this is a dumb freaking idea. Like, why are we focusing our energy on this? We should be focusing on this. And more so, more effort goes into like, how do I say that without coming off like an asshole, rather than trying to figure out what to say? Because at the end, like, that's what I'm trying to teach my entire team, similar to like core values you have, is brutal honesty. To be honest, you don't have to be brutal, but sometimes you do. So like, we try to translate that through all the communication we have with our clients of like, hey, like, we should not run a sale during these times because you will cannibalize your customers, or we should not do this because of this. And I think it builds for a better relationship and also better trust from the client, because they know you're not just a yes person and you're sticking up for what is in their best interest.
I want to point out too, one, I love when people argue with me in good faith, right? Like, and that's the point you said, you know, we're not going to do this because of that. And I think having that real good understanding and having a reason to back up your decisions is going to be really important in gaining that trust with the client. Now, you might still get someone who wants to argue with you because they, you know, really didn't want to hire anyone. They just decided to.
Yeah.
But being able to say like, hey, we need to do the study. I work for a research company. So we need to do this research study this way, and this way because of X, Y, and Z. And once you present it to them, if they still want to go forward and you know, mess up the plan, then we can have that discussion. But they need to have the full picture of the reason why and the way that we're going to go about doing this. I once had a client who kind of chastised me when I was young in my career because I did exactly what she asked for. I did the project exactly how she wanted it to be. And then when we got to the end and she was like, oh, I wish we would have, you know, done X, Y, and Z instead. And I said, well, we really should have, but you wanted it this way, so that's how we did it. And she was like, it's your job as the expert to present me with options. And I've never lost that, like, you know, at the 22-year-old getting yelled at by a client. Never let that go, because it is my job as the expert in this conversation to present you with options. And if you still choose the wrong one, fine. But at least I did my job to make sure that you understood what that choice meant and what the consequences were.
I try to like triple down on those kinds of conversations where it's like, yeah, but I'm gonna still do this. Well, do you want to lose money? Like, because you're gonna lose a lot of money by doing this. Like, are you sure?
Right.
And they're like, yeah. I'm like, okay, can I get that in writing?
Right. Let's agree. Let's get a court stenographer here, because I need proof later that it wasn't me. It was you.
That's one of the reasons why I started doing. I started having a call recorder on all calls, even like not only sales calls for review, but also client calls. Because we've had clients say like, yeah, let's do this. Then 3 months later, even though we told them not to, 3 months later, they're like, why do we do this? And
right.
It's like, you told us to do this. Here's the timestamp. Look at 14 minutes and 22 seconds. And we'll have that conversation there from 3 months ago. And they're like,
yeah,
shit, you're right.
Exactly. So, you know, you mentioned that sometimes with your culture fit and someone's not a right fit, you end up doing all of that upfront work and then they end up churning anyway. So what do you think is the biggest blind spot for leaders when it comes to deals that churn or deals that stall? What are they missing?
As far as like pre-client or pre-purchase, or how would you want to specify?
I mean, let's talk about like post-purchase. The ones who said yes, the ones who you brought on board, you've done all of that work, and then it just kind of, you know, petered out. What happened? Why is that happening? What are they missing in that process?
Probably a lack of urgency and a lack of ownership. We've had a few clients in the past where they would sign on, like excited, like, yeah, let's crush it, let's do this. And like a week would go by, like 2 weeks would go by, and we're like, hey, we got all these things ready for you, like, let's kick it off. And they're like, yeah, let me push this off. And like, they just keep pushing off the start, even though they've paid, agreement signed, and we're like ready to rock and roll. They're just either stalling because of internal politics or stalling because of maybe not waiting for certain assets, or maybe they weren't ready. So I think during those times is where like certain deals start to stall off. We had a client sign on in March for like a one-time project. And it is August now, and we haven't even started on that one-time project because they're waiting for marketing assets. And give us another week for marketing assets. Wait 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, a month went by, followed up. They're like, yeah, we're still waiting on them. And I'm like, at that point, I just gave up. And I'm like, okay, they're going to come back to us when they have everything ready. And sure enough, last month, and I think in June, okay, we're ready to start. We have everything. All right, cool. Let's hop on a call, go over it. We hop on a call. And they're like, yeah, we're still waiting on marketing assets. And I'm like, okay, cool. I'm just not going to bother you until you actually send anything over. So in those cases, it's either like being underprepared, not wanting to like do something that you haven't done before, or in our experiences, is just like the client lagging on giving us information, which stalls out the process, which then stalls out our feedback loop. And then at that point, we're just waiting on the client, and then the client is just unresponsive.
And that's so frustrating too, because you're like, at one point you wanted this enough to say yes and to sign a contract, right? And so what has changed? And if something has changed, like, let us know so that we're not bothering you. But also maybe we need to pivot your strategy. Maybe we need to pivot your plan. Maybe there's something that we can do to make this more urgent and valuable to you in this moment.
Yeah, we try to do that for like the first month and a half. But after like 45 days and we are getting nowhere, we just let the client wait and see, like have them reply to us at that point. Because it's like, you look at the Slack messages and you have like following up and like enough of a repetition to where like, okay, I think we should just not follow up anymore, because like we're just waiting, like the client's not responding.
Right.
So
how many times can I follow up, circle back, reconnect, you know, send them something new, ask for some time? Like, how many times can you do that before you've just literally gone in circles?
Yeah. At some point the bridge will never be crossed. Hopefully it will be at one point, you know.
It's okay. And it's okay to let it go for the time that it, like, you don't have to hammer so hard on it that you just become annoying or obnoxious, and reminding them that they don't find you valuable anyway. So like, just let it be.
Well, for them, like, they paid. So like,
right.
You know, are you going to get your money's worth? We're not going to you're way outside of the refund range and way outside of the chargeback range. Not that I've had a chargeback, or I've had a refund, but I've not had chargebacks.
Right.
Even then, like, you paid us to do the service, and now, like, our entire schedule and flow is messed up because we were expecting to start it in a week or two. Month has gone by, and, like, we signed on different projects, and they're like, our capacity's out. Like, we can't fully service you like we should have months ago.
Right, if you would have just kicked off when you were supposed to.
Exactly, yeah.
One of the hot topics that I see in my community, and a lot of my people that I talk to are in like B2B sales, or they are in some kind of like customer success renewals type role. Hmm. And the hot topic lately seems to be this idea of what they're calling scale or tech touch approach to customer relationships. With your background in, you know, digital marketing, how have you seen that kind of evolve, especially as we become more and more chronically online?
I mean, it just goes back to like what we talked about earlier, where like even the salespeople that you do have in those roles, or like the customer service reps that you have in those roles, are still not good. So like, I mean, at that point, if you have like an AI agent that's trained up on the entire product wiki and product knowledge, they may be more useful and will probably push the needle a little bit more forward than the salesperson would. But then again, if we're talking enterprise clients, then it may be a bit different. I think it's interesting for sure. I think it'll probably be swayed towards that for the most part, at least for these bigger brands, where like for us, I love the human touch. Like, I love being able to not only talk with people on a consistent basis, whether it's like with you, Alyssa, on this podcast, or with clients, or with my team, but I also enjoy doing that in person. Like, if a client flies out to Nashville, I'm always grabbing lunch with them. Or if I'm flying out to New York and we have like a client, like, I'm gonna get lunch with them. Like, I think the human touch is gonna go away ever so slowly, and the pendulum will swing back to where like it would happen to like grabbing lunch with friends on a random Tuesday, you know? And then people are like, whoa, it's vintage that we can go out to lunch on a random Tuesday and like not plan it or whatever. It'll be like a trend by that point. Either way, I think going back to your main point of utilizing email and SMS for the tech touch micro communication makes sense. I think SMS would probably play a better role there because it is more personal. It's over the phone. And I think it'd be less detected than sending out an email. So I think it would probably be the best. Yeah, I'd probably use SMS for that approach more so than email.
And considering all of the incredible people that you've had a chance to meet or aspire to meet, who is leading the charge? Who is changing the way we build relationships with our customers?
That's a great question. I think one of my favorite, I haven't met him yet in person, but I see him on Twitter. We have a lot of mutuals, and I see him on LinkedIn. But Taylor Holliday is a pretty cool cat. He's out of Common Thread Collective, massive marketing agency. They do really, really well, but he has a certain way of thinking about how everything in the marketing stack works. And I just find him very, very interesting, and it'd be great to meet him at some point. Just the way, not only the top level of like, here's what kind of creatives you need to run, here's what kind of ads you need to run, but then also deep down on the statistical side of like, here's how the percentage of like churn would work out. Here's percentage of people going from ad to landing page to opt-in, opt-in to conversion. Like, yeah, from all the way high up all the way down and into the ground, like he knows all that. So I think it'd be interesting to meet him and maybe have like a 1 to 2 hour conversation with him over like cigars or like whiskey or something like that.
I'm gonna have to add him to my LinkedIn follows list, because I love it when people take something that seems obvious and intuitive and really kind of make me rethink about it, right? And have a different perspective. So I will have to add him to my LinkedIn follow. But if someone is really connecting with you and they want to learn more, where can they find you online?
Yeah, the best place to find me online is a mix of a lot of things. YouTube is where I post weekly tutorials and strategies on email and SMS marketing. It's just my name, Nikita Vakrushev. LinkedIn, I post probably a post a day, whether it's email strategy, memes, etc. That's just my name as well. If you are in need of email marketing help or want to know how much more money you could be making from your email list, get a free audit. Just go to aspectagency.com, aspektagency.com, and just click the free audit button at the top, and I'll personally do it for you. So I do all the audits, but yeah, that's pretty much it.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Nikita, for joining me on the show. This was a really fantastic conversation.
Yeah, this is a fun one, Alyssa. Thank you.